when you treat adults like adults, when you empower humans to be human, when you say, these are our clear goals, and this is what we think it'll take to achieve them, people will be more productive. They will be more successful. They will be more efficient because all the interests are aligned.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. We are back with another great episode. Jamie and I are very excited about this because this is a personal friend. We've spent lots of personal time with him, his family, and collectively in business. And Joey Coleman, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, Jim, Jamie, it is such a delight to be here. Thanks to all the 18 Summers listeners out there who are joining as well for the conversation. Love you too. Love everything the brand stands for, everything you do, and just really honored to get to spend some time with you today.
Thank you. Well, we have talked about lots of times family rhythms, and our evening meal of best and weirdest came from the Coleman clan. I think you do best, worst, and weirdest. And
we do best, worst, weirdest. Yeah. Although with the younger kids, they kind of gloss over worst pretty quickly, which is great. We've got plenty of things in our lives to be thankful for.
That's right. And that's been a big part of our life. Another thing is, as you know, we're all about the how. We love entrepreneurship, but how are we going to be able to get to be with our families, be in Costa Rica? And I can say with all honesty, the work that we've done together over the last 5 to 7 years has changed the way that I've been able to conduct my business. I mean, one of the things you taught in your first book, Never Lose a Customer, was so important for our client journey. And you saw our sales in our real estate investment business go up about 3 to 4-fold, which was monstrous. That's not with bringing on more staff or doing a huge marketing thing. There were some little tweaks. And so I believe, especially with so many of our listeners, they want to have more time with their family, period, end of stories. So if you're learning to keep your customers, that's really important. And I know we've talked about that before in the show, but one of the things that you're starting to do now with a new book coming out, which we brought you in to our real estate investment company, did an incredible day, is not only about losing the client, don't lose the client, but don't lose the employee or the teammate, as I like to say. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that? Because this is so important where I think people are like, I want to buy back my time. I want to have more time with my family. If you're losing clients and losing teammates in your business, that's going to hurt. And I know you've helped a lot of people. Do you want to kind of open up on that?
Absolutely. And Jim, you're spot on. You know, what's interesting is having spent the last 20 years being known as the customer experience guy, some people are, wait, Joey, you're now the employee experience guy? And I'm like, friends, it's not that big of a distinction. You're making more of a distinction of it than it deserves. Mainly because what I learned early on in my career, which I imagine has been experienced in your careers as well, is that we can't deliver a remarkable customer or client experience if we don't have employees who are ready to deliver that experience. This is the challenge most business owners have. They get really good at delivering the experience themselves. But as soon as they start to hire team members and build out a staff, they start to realize that their way of treating the customer isn't necessarily mirrored by how their employees treat the customer. And so then they're like, oh, let's have some systems and let's scale it and let's train them. And then the business grows and it grows and training falls off and the things that were important in the beginning aren't important anymore. And next thing we realize, we've got employees who are delivering an experience that is not at all what we want. What's interesting is the typical employee can't deliver a remarkable customer experience because they have no context for what one is. They haven't had remarkable experiences themselves. Ooh. And so as employers, as leaders, we have the opportunity to treat our people in a way that is so remarkable, that is so fantastic, that is so wonderful, that they see by the example how they should be treating our customers. And so that's what the whole book is about. The first book, Never Lose a Customer Again, How Do You Treat Your Customers Across the Customer Journey? We've taken that same methodology, that same framework, and turned it inward on the organization. The new book's called Never Lose an Employee Again. Same philosophy, same framework about creating remarkable experiences for your team that will help them deliver the kind of experiences you want and keep them in the fold long term.
Love it.
Joey, would you say, like, as you're saying, I relate everything back to like the home and the culture of a home and the vision in the home of a family and the values. Really, a business is the family and it has a vision and core values and it has a vibe. And just like at home, as you have more children, you gain more employees, like kind of the same, to make certain that you and your spouse have the same vision. You carry that forward with your children, that you're demonstrating those things in which matter most to you. And so as you're explaining this, I'm just thinking, wow, the same thing happens at home too. In home culture, it's so important that as you bring on more employees, that they're brought into and taught and treated in such a way that they then know what it's like to be a part of that family.
Jamie, you are spot on. In the same way that one might onboard a new child into a family, one onboards a new employee into a workplace, into a company, into an organization. What's interesting, in preparation for our podcast, I was thinking a lot about this concept of family, because I know you too. If there was a single word that I would associate with Jamie and Jim Shields, it is family. So many businesses talk about, oh, well, our people are our family. Come join our family. But what's interesting is so many businesses, you're joining a dysfunctional family. You're joining a family where the parents don't talk to each other, where the kids are constantly fighting, where no one knows what direction the family's heading, where no one's sure if the family's going to be able to pay its bills and cover food on the table next month. I mean, these are the practical analogous experiences when someone's joining an organization. So I think if we're going to use family as our terminology in business, which I think we can, we just need to recognize that not everyone has had the same family experience growing up. And if we're going to use that analogy, we need to be very clear as the leaders or the parents of the family about what the vision for this unit is, what the vision and the future and the goal of this family is. And I think businesses could learn a lot from that.
Sure. And what do you think, as you said, you bring home a new baby. So let's compare this to you bring home a new team member. What is the biggest, oh my gosh, you didn't do that? Or no, you don't leave the baby alone. Like the onboarding of that new family member that you're watching. Because so many of our people have their own small businesses and they bring on that person who's going to hopefully revolutionize, bring it to the next level, buy back some of their time. What is the biggest mistake you're seeing?
Yeah, we've all employers have made. Let's have fun. I love the idea of this analogy, but I want to put a little bit of a caveat on the beginning before I dive too deep, because I'm about to go crazy into this analogy, that I don't want you to treat your new employee like an infant. So even though we're going to be drawing some parallels to bringing an infant into the house, that doesn't mean to patronize your employee and treat them like an infant. But there are some things that we would never do with a child that we do with employees all the time. So for example, employee shows up for the first day at work and we're not there to meet him at the front door. We just let him come in and we're like, oh, hey, sorry, we didn't know we were going to have you show up today. So let me put you in this room. I'm going to turn on the TV. You can watch some videos about harassment in the workplace and I'll come back and get you in 3 hours. Let me just leave them. Or, hey, baby, we're going to lay you down over here and here's a bunch of paperwork that you can't read or understand. Just go ahead and spend some time signing all the pages and have those ready for us. Oh, hey, it's lunchtime. Great. We're all going to go out to lunch together at a restaurant you've never been to and give you items off a menu and you're not even ready to eat these things. And all the other people in the family are going to sit at one end of the table and have kind of a clicky discussion. And we're going to leave you at the other end of the table to fend for yourself. Oh, and then after that, we're going to go back to the office, home, and put you back in the conference room, the living room, watching another set of videos that are marketing strategy videos, and we'll come get you in a couple hours. If we did that with an infant, we would be reported to the Department of Child Services, right? There'd be a conversation. That child needs to be removed from that house. Yes. And yet, this is how most businesses operate. We don't make those experiences good. And as if that wasn't bad enough, how often in a family does a new baby show up and all the attention goes to the baby? The older kids, the ones who have been there for a while, suddenly don't get any focus or attention. Mm-hmm. Suddenly they have to start acting out to get mom or dad's attention.
Good point.
The same thing happens with our employees. If we overly focus on the new one, the veteran ones are like, what about me? What about me? Why are they getting all these perks? Why are they getting pay raises? Why are they getting big titles? I had to work for 5 years before I got that title.
Wow.
This is like the infant child being given the 10 p.m. curfew when the older siblings are like, it took me until college before I had the 10 p.m. curfew. You got it in fifth grade. What's going on? So we've got that problem, but we also have the problem in the converse of overly focusing on the veterans and leaving the new one to fend for themselves. We'd never leave a new baby to fend for itself. Yet so often in business, we get them in and we're like, why aren't you up to speed? Why aren't you chewing solids yet? Why aren't you walking? We would never say to a newborn infant 2 days into the job, okay, you take it from here. You got it. You know where the bathroom's at. You know where your computer's at. Get to working. We would never do that. Yeah. We would hold their hand. We would nurture them. We would care for them. We need to do the same thing with our people.
Love it. Love it. And what is that first step? So we know what we don't want to do. What should we do? And of course, I'm speaking from mistakes I've made, as Joey knows and laughs about, and I'm able to share on the business side and on the family side.
I think part of life is making mistakes. The only question is, are we learning from those mistakes or are we just repeating them? And what I see with so many businesses is nothing that I share in my book, nothing that I share from the stage or in my consulting engagements is necessarily revolutionary. These are things we know we're supposed to do. So let's look at the very beginning of the journey. The very beginning of the employee journey is the job listing, where they see a listing for an open position that they might be interested in applying for. Now, what usually happens in a job listing is it starts out something like this. Here at Acme Corp, our vision is to create synergies with all of our clients. And you're like, I don't even know what that sentence means. Let's read the next sentence and see if we get some understanding. And then you keep reading and you're reading about all the things. It's me, me, me. It's this is who we are. This is what we do. The person we're looking for has the following skills. And then it's 48 bullet points of things you're supposed to be able to do. And then it concludes with something like salary commensurate with experience. I'm at the end of your job description and I don't have a clear idea of what it's like to work for you. I don't have a clear idea of what I'm actually going to do every day. Right. I don't have a clear idea of how much you're going to pay attention to me and help me grow and foster and nurture my career. And I don't have a clear idea on what I'm going to be paid. Guess what? I'm not applying. In this day and age, I'm not implying, because that's the other thing that everyone who's listening, who's an employer, needs to recognize. The marketplace has never been richer and better for employees than it is right now. Mainly because if you're an employee, your employer can be anywhere in the world. It used to be your employer was within 30 miles of your house because you had to commute to work. Now with remote work, you can work for a company that's a completely different country in a completely different industry on the other side of the planet. And they'll happily pay you top dollar wages. Mm-hmm. And you can work from the comfort of your own home. And you don't need to commute. And you get more days off. And you get more perks and benefits. This is the reality of the world we live in today. So all the businesses that are like, oh, I just wish it would go back to the way it was back in the day. I get it. I empathize. But we're not going back. This is only increasing. We are only going to have more remote workers, more workers that are gig workers, more workers that are working for a shorter period of time. Jim and I, we talked about our parents, the days of going to a job and you'd work 40 years for the job and get the gold watch and retire. If you've worked at a company for more than 4 years, it tells me one of two things. Either that is an amazing world-class employer or you're not that bright.
Wow.
Sorry, that's what I know when I look at a resume and I'm like, really? Where's your upward mobility? Where's your flexibility? Where's your exposure to other things? What are you doing to grow and develop yourself? And that's the marketplace that employers find themselves trying to find and hire talent in.
So true. It's a different world since the pandemic, really. It's
100%. And here's the interesting thing. People say, oh, I just wish it'd go back to the way it was in 2019. Really? It wasn't that great.
No.
The experience in the relationship between employers and employees in 2019 was nothing to get excited about. What we're realizing now is the employees understand that the emperor has no clothes. The employees recognize that I don't have to put up with this ridiculousness. I don't need to give 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. I saw something on TV the other day where a guy was saying, it was in an interview. They were showing a video of a real interview. And the guy was saying, well, I'd be willing to work 40 hours a week, but if we get up more into the 70, that's going to be hard for me to do. And they just went from 40 to 70 in the conversation. And the recruiter who's doing the interview goes, I definitely think we could keep it towards the lower end of that in the 50, 55 range. And I'm like, when did we decide that all of our time is spent at work? I know you all talk about this, and it's one of the things I love about the 18 summers model. You only have 18 summers. The time you have with your family, the time you have with your children, the time you have with your spouse, your significant other is limited. We think nothing about spending extra hours at work. But suddenly we're like, oh, don't know if I can carve out that extra time to make it to the fifth grade rehearsal concert. What? Why don't we have time for those things? Especially because isn't that the original family we're part of? I understand we might have a work family. I don't mean to diminish or belittle the work family, but you probably have another family too that isn't getting as much attention as it could.
Yeah. Oftentimes that original family, I mean, that's why you're working hard. That's so much why.
Or at least that's the story you say, right? Oh, well, I'm doing all of this for my spouse. I'm doing this for my kids. Really? I think you're doing it for your identity.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Lots of times.
The origination, right? And so I know, as Jim mentioned in the beginning, so much of the freedom that we're able to have is because having you help us put the right pieces into place and having some of these, the principles and the lessons in which you teach, so that we can be surrounded by the right people and so that we can onboard them and keep them happy. And I even think about this and revisit this with people that we have in the home and those people in which I'm delegating family tasks to. It's not just our helpers in the business, but it's also our helpers in the home, our helpers with our children. And it's really important to appreciate and celebrate and onboard, as you've said.
Absolutely, Jamie, you're spot on. And one of the things that I will compliment and commend you two on is I've spent time with you when we've been around your helpers, both your internal house family helpers and your external kind of work job workers and helpers. And what I think is fascinating is on more than one occasion, I've seen it getting to the end of the day. And you've said, hey, we're going to have dinner. Would you like to join us? You can know whether you have a great place to work by whether or not your employees want to hang out when they're not on the clock.
Yeah.
That's a great signal. When you've got an employee who goes, yeah, I'd love to go to dinner with you, boss. Yeah. I'd love to go to dinner with you, coworkers. That's someone who is enjoying the experience. Not when they feel forced that they have to go, or the person who says, yeah, no, I'm good. I was done at 5, right? It's 5:01. I'll see you tomorrow, right? I'm not saying that people shouldn't have their personal lives. Please, friends, if you're listening, don't misunderstand that. What I am saying is you only need to look at the behavior and reactions of your employees to see whether they're happy at work. When I came in to work with the whole team from the property management company a few weeks ago, I can look around and I say this respectfully. I can see the people who are loving being here. I can see the people who are here for a time period, but that time period isn't going to be very long. And I can see the people who probably should move on. And I believe that in every organization I've ever been in. And that's not because I'm special or unique. It's because I'm willing to look at the reality in front of me. And that's what it means to be a leader, to be a parent. You have to be willing to embrace reality. I understand you may not like the reality. I understand another dirty diaper may not be what you want to deal with today. But it's the reality of the situation we're in. And the only way we get better is by addressing the present reality and figuring out ways to improve it.
Yeah. Well, what I've always liked about you is this simple, novel concept of results. And that was something we really taught, because these old paradigms, like you talked about the watch in 40 years. Well, yeah, there was this badge of honor, 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours, 70 hours. Hey, but what results did you get? And you and I kept going back to that. And I'm going, that doesn't impress me. And I've even said, if you are doing something for 60 hours that you could have done in 36 hours, that's what impresses me. Because I think you're going to be more sharp and more rejuvenated to do that the next week and then the following month, and the burnout stops. So I've always loved how you focus less on the old punch, but the results. Okay, what are our benchmarks? What are our results? And then we back into it, because I can tell you, we do better now financially and I work less now. I still work, as you know, but I work less and with less stress than before, because results became so key. And people, whether it's in family or in business, they forgot to look at that novel concept of results.
They really do. And I understand why this happens, right? I have empathy. We live in a society that tracks time. and pays attention to time and values time. And then you might run into somebody who's like, don't trade your time for money. And yet we trade time for money all the time as human beings, all the time. The way I try to run my business with my team is I say, look, here's our goal for the week. This is what we're going to accomplish this week. We've got our things we work on every day, but here's our big goal for the week. And if we're done with this goal for the week on Thursday at 3 p.m., I'm good if you don't come to work on Friday. Now, in the beginning, we're guessing, we're hoping. And what happens is they're like, oh, Joey, we kind of misestimated. That's going to take till next Tuesday to be done. Okay, we learned. Other times it's like, oh, actually, we were done with this on Monday afternoon, Joey. You really want us to take 4 days up? No, I clearly misunderstood how much time this should take. But now it's a give and take in conversation. And when I have an employee say to me, hey, Joey, I've got something coming up that I need to have some time off for, I'm like, okay, first of all, you don't need to ask for time off. I'd like you to tell me so we know what our support is, but I'm not a warden. You're not asking permission for parole, right? What I want to know is, you know what our goal for the week is, and you don't want to be here Friday. Are you going to be able to achieve the goal before you leave? And if you are, great. If you're not, that doesn't mean you can't go, but it means we have to have a conversation about what are we going to do to get to, is the goal not time sensitive? It doesn't need to be done by Friday. Great. You want to work a little extra on Monday? Great. You want to work on the evenings while you're home? Great. As long as you're balancing your life and schedule in a way that works for you while also driving the business goals forward. And this is where I think a lot of employers misunderstand that idea of giving their workers or their team members flexibility. They presume that means that nothing gets done. No, 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 friends. In my experience, when you treat adults like adults, when you empower humans to be human, when you say, these are our clear goals, and this is what we think it'll take to achieve them, people will be more productive. They will be more successful. They will be more efficient because all the interests are aligned.
I love that. And I can't help but think too, I keep returning back to home with our teens. It's never like you have to do dishes by this time of day. They know their responsibilities and they know the other stuff they have going on, and like, make sure your stuff's done before the door hits you. Like, you have to manage and plan properly. We hit a little bit of a snag yesterday. We're in Costa Rica, they're in Florida. And so kind of doing this dance for the first time of remote managing my teammates.
Your young adult teammate.
So Monday rhythm, and like, they missed the mark. And I panic and I said, here's the deal. This happens every day at this time. If you'd like to do all of that yourself, totally fine. You don't have to be prepared for it. It's the cleaner. If you got to have X, Y, and Z done in order for the rest of our stuff to flow function. If you aren't capable of that, or if you can't do that, totally fine. But then you're responsible for all of it.
And right.
And magically, they got it done.
Right. Magically. And this is where I would say that our employees need to understand their roles, their responsibilities, and their relationships. What I mean by their relationships is, if you fail on your role and responsibility, how does that impact all the other people in the enterprise? If your job isn't done, that causes a cascading effect over here that messes up other people's ability to get it done. Yeah. So you're not just doing this because it's your job. You're doing it because people are relying on you to deliver it at a certain time, at a certain level of quality, with a certain rhythm and cadence. Mm-hmm. And so again, in the same way that we might have to explain to a child or a young adult, hey, because you missed the mark, here's the consequence. We have to explain that to our people too. I think so many leaders are afraid to have honest conversations with their team. I actually schedule them in advance. Mm-hmm. What do I mean by that? We have a regular standing call every 3 weeks with my assistant where she tells me things where I've missed the mark and things where I've hit the mark and things where I've exceeded the mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell her the same. And that way, nobody has to say, oh my gosh, I have to ask for a candid conversation, or, oh, I need to carve out time to have a tough talk. No, it's in the calendar. And the reason we do it every 3 weeks is because it doesn't need to be every week, because every week starts to feel like it's the policing, right? Oh. It's just like, really? Come on. And it also gives a little grace. that somebody might miss the mark on Monday, but then hit it every day after that for the next 3 weeks. So then do we really need to bring it up in that 3 week meeting? Probably not. It might have been an aberration, a miss one time. But if over the course of those 3 weeks, we missed the mark 6 times, well, yeah, now we have to have a conversation.
How do you encourage people? I know there's a big part of never lose a customer. We have to have the difficult conversations. How do you encourage people to approach those difficult conversations?
Yeah, we don't like difficult conversations.
Yeah. And you know why we don't like difficult conversations? Because we're human.
Yeah.
Let me reiterate that or repeat that if I may. We don't like difficult conversations because we're human. And when we get into a difficult conversation, what the majority of us as humans do is we revert back to that traumatic, difficult conversation we had when we were younger. Whether that's 3, 5, 10, 15, 20, I don't care what age it's with. I don't care who it was with. But there was somewhere in your history where you learned that a tough conversation can go really bad, really fast.
Yes.
And then we spend the rest of our lives trying to avoid that at all cost. Early on in my dating relationship with my amazing wife, Barrett, that I know you two know, I explained to her that I felt like I was walking on eggshells and I was waiting for the other shoe to drop when she was going to get angry with me. It had nothing to do with her. You've met Barrett. Barrett is the least angry, least loose. Like, it's just not her personality. But I had been in previous relationships where I'd be trucking along, everything's fine, and something would explode. And the reaction would be so different than the circumstance that caused the reaction that I became really tepid and nervous about, oh, geez, did I do the wrong thing? And very apologetic. And what was great is she said to me, she's like, how about you just trust me to be responsible enough to say, if there's a problem, I'm going to bring it up. And I'm going to bring it up in a respectful way at the right time, in the sense timing being when I think there's a likelihood of success in the conversation. For example, in a marriage, we all know, do not have the conversation about where is this relationship going, which is kind of my catchphrase for all of the talks that are tough. Like, where's this relationship going? How much money do we have? Why did you buy that? Why did you treat the kids this way? Why did you say that at the cocktail party? Don't have that conversation within 5 minutes of the light being turned off at night. But just don't start it. Don't start it in bed. Not a good place. Have that conversation in the middle of the day. Have that conversation 2 days later. Take the temperature out of the conversation when everybody can have a more even-keeled interaction about the circumstance. And with our employees, it's the same way. I've had situations where an employee has done something or I've seen an email they've sent a client and I've been like, oh my gosh, that's never how I would have done that. That's not even close. What I do is I make a little note in my calendar with just one word for like the next day. And when I get to that point in my calendar, I then send an email and I say, hey, we need to connect sometime tomorrow or the next day. So I push it out. Pushing it out intentionally. I don't want to have the conversation while it's hot, while I'm hot or they're hot. I want to have the conversation when the temperature is down. And our employees are the same way. This is why we structure reviews. This is why we structure one-on-ones with our team members. This is why we structure recurring meetings. I'm not anti-meeting. I'm anti-meeting that doesn't have an agenda or a goal. I don't want to have a meeting for the sake of having a meeting. They're the worst. And we've all been to those. Oh my gosh, just annoying. And everybody in the room knows it. One of the greatest things about being an outside consultant, I can go to those meetings and go, why are we having this meeting? Why are we here right now? And then I watch a lot. Well, because we always have a Tuesday 2 p.m. status call. Why? Well, because we've been doing that for 10 years. Great. Why? Well, because one time back in '04, someone didn't have the status meeting and we lost a gig for it. Great. So because of that one mistake, we're punishing everyone for the 20 years since then? Wait, just ludicrous.
Yeah.
We know this stuff. We can do better. The opportunities available to us.
Joey, this is such gold. We know each other on the personal and business level. It really does translate to both sides, big time. Between Jamie and I, between our top employees, between our children, I love it because you got a team in the career and you got a team at home, and both of them are going to help the other one if you do it right.
Jim, I totally agree with you. And if I may, you've used a phrase multiple times in our conversation that I want to spend a little time attaching to briefly, and that's team. When you think of the people who work with you as your staff or your employees or your team or your family or your tribe, each of those words has distinct, different meaning.
Absolutely.
I'm not pro one word or the other. I just want you to be conscious of the word you use. Mm-hmm. I want you to think through your choice. And I'm sorry, no one ever said, I love hanging out with my staff. That's ludicrous, right? That's ridiculous. I love playing the same games with my team. I love winning with my team. I love spending quality time with my family. I love the connected feeling I have with my community, with our tribe, with our people, with our group. Use the words you want to use, but be intentional about their meaning and make sure you explain that meaning when you bring new people into the fold. This is why we use these words. This is what team means to us. Team means you don't leave at the end of the day if you've got another teammate underwater. Team means when you're done and someone else needs a little help, you chip in. Team means some days you might be the one scoring and some days someone else might be the one scoring. That's what we know about team.
Love it. Now, upon this release, this is the big week.
This is the big week.
Top Wall Street Journal sellers on your other books, deservingly so. They've helped our life. Where can people best go to get Never Lose an Employee
Again? Never Lose an Employee Again is available wherever you like to get books. If that's your indie bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon, wherever you like to get books, it's there. And I will call out, since we're having this conversation in a podcast, there's three different versions of the book. Right? There's the hardcover version, if you want to have it sitting on your shelf or you want to take notes in it. There's the ebook version on both Kindle and Nook. So if you want to digital highlight and pull things that way, you can do that. And if you've enjoyed the sound of my voice, there's an audiobook that I narrate. So if you want to listen to my voice at 3x speed talking like Mickey Mouse, you can make that life choice to get through the book a lot faster. So yeah, the book's called Never Lose an Employee Again. I so appreciate you having me on the show. So appreciate everybody who was kind enough to listen in. And hopefully you got an idea or two about how you can create more remarkable experiences for your employees, whether those are the employees who are helping you with your personal life or your professional life.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joey.
Thanks,
friends.
Thank you. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.